I mean, I can't really say much about that. I mean, bad deal. I mean, what else can you say?
It was like an accidental brush of the face mask.
That's about it, man. Y'all probably saw it better than I saw it.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
That was Browns cornerback Tremont Williams talking about the pass interference penalty, not pass interference, the face mask penalty at the end of the first half that gave them an untimed down, allowing Seattle
tack
to
on three.
Tack on 3 points at the end of that game. All right, we're going to go now to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline and bring in the voice of the Cleveland Browns from the PNC Bank, Cleveland Browns Radio Network, Jim Donovan. Jim, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you guys.
Good to be with you. Your takeaway, now that you've had a five-hour flight, some bumps. We didn't know when we were going to land. We didn't know what was going on in the middle of that 767. But your thoughts on that game, Jim?
Well, I think it just, it revisits the problems that, have been around all year long. I mean, we got a reprieve from it last week when they won the game against San Francisco, and everything really kind of looked a lot better. I mean, the offense looked good. The defense looked terrific. And they had 9 sacks in the game. But I think you're realistic that a lot of the problems that have been there all season long, aren't suddenly going to disappear. And especially when you're playing a team that's playing at the top of the game as Seattle is going in. So the problem of defense just really rears its head again. And yesterday was just, from the kickoff of the game until the end of the game, the Browns could not stop Seattle. They could not stop the Seahawks all day long. So that's the major problem. If you can't stop them, you certainly can't outscore them. So you're really, playing against everything. But the defense is a major problem, guys.
It definitely is, Jim. And Johnny Manziel, 19 of 32, just a shade over 150 yards. Just your overall day, was Johnny's day because of Seattle, or was Johnny's day because of the lack of weapons and just an overall, his play?
Well, I think it's both, Matt. I really do. I mean, he wasn't able to play a lot because they had long drives. And as I said, the defense could never get off the field. I mean, really accented by the one time when Andy Lee punched them out at the 4-yard line and they go right back down the field again. And they just keep getting first down after first down. And they're all like third down conversions. And they're not third and ones either. I mean, they're third and six, third and eight. And they're able to do that. When that's happening, then your offense is sitting over on the side of the field. And Manziel said it after the game yesterday. He said, I kept hearing, okay, punt team, get ready to go out, to get the punt, hoping that Seattle would be punting the ball. And then, nobody would go out because the first down would be gained. So that was the one problem. Then the other thing was, I think when he did get out there, he got victimized by some drops. Gabriel had a
Five
big
of them.
One. Pryor had a big one.
Yep.
I thought Benjamin had one down by the 10-yard line when they were trying to get in and they settled for a field goal. So, but I will tell you this. I thought he was pretty good yesterday. I really did. When he was on the field, he moved the team. I thought that under some tough circumstances. But he just doesn't have any weapons right now that can help him a great deal, except for Barnage and Duke Johnson and an occasional run by Crowell.
Talking with Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns for the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. Yeah, the lack of weapons was very, very apparent for Johnny Manziel in that game and the defense, to go back to it. It seems that this scheme defense is struggling all around the NFL. We know Rob Ryan's already been fired. Rex Ryan is trying to blame his players right now for that defense not working in Buffalo and actually getting criticized heavily on Twitter. But this defense, it seems that the scheme is tough. But Matt did some interesting analysis. Seattle plays the same 11 guys on 2/3 of their snaps, and basically the whole back seven plays every single snap together. So they have that continuity. The Browns don't have any group of people that play together even 1/3 of the time on that defense. And do you think that that is part of the problem?
Well, I'm sure, the Browns probably, at least in the way back, okay, probably thought going into the year they could play the same people in the secondary, but that hasn't come out, been able to, be done because of injuries, and now you've lost Hayden, and Gibson and Whitner have been out for a while. The only guy that's played, really, is Tremont Williams. I think, they obviously, Seattle's got a lot of talent on defense. I mean, they're just loaded on defense. They all run well. They're big. I mean, they're physical. I mean, they really chase you down. I just don't think we have those kind of players. I just think that But that is a problem. You're right. I mean, we just don't have a group, that can go in there, play in there, and play together for a period of time and then get off the field. And I think that that is a problem. I mean, so many times when you look out there, the Browns are going through these dramatic personnel changes on defense, and you wonder sometimes, it's so dramatic at times, if they can all get organized and get set for the next play.
Well, yeah, and you talk about the defense. Well, right now, the only person that's missing from the Browns' defense is Joe Hayden. It's not like we were seeing significant playing time from Justin Gilbert. And yesterday, Seattle was without Cam Chancellor.
Right.
And they don't seem to miss a beat, and it doesn't change what's happening for that defense. And it just seems very, very troubling. Would you say when you don't have the players, given the investment that has been made on that side of the ball in terms of both free agency and the draft, is that a colossal failure on the personnel side of things, or is it a lack of coaching these people up and getting the most out of them? Who is to blame for that?
Well, you're right. I mean, when you take a look at the pay stubs, it doesn't add up to what you're seeing perform out on the field. So, I mean, are you getting enough out of the free agents? Well, I don't know. I mean, Whitner has not had a good year. Dansby, you know, has played a lot and at times has played well. Randy Starks hasn't played, it hasn't jumped out to me. And then you do go to the draft. Shelton seems to really give you an awful lot of effort, and I realize that, you know, he's trying to come along, and he seems to be, you know, made some nice plays yesterday. It's just not there. I mean, the money invested and the draft invested so far has not paid off. And really, Nathan, the thing that really keeps coming back and really punching you in the nose is that Gilbert just has not been the player when you kind of verbalize what's going on, and then you just say, when you get a guy that high in the draft to come in and play that position, first of all, he's not even playing it. And I realize now it's because of concussion. But before this, let's face it, it was a stretch to put him out there, and it was a gamble to put him out there. And I don't think the other 10 guys wanted him out there many times because they knew it was such a gamble. That's the one that's really coming back and punching you in the nose every week, is that you have to, you have that high investment and you're getting really nothing out of him other than at times he returns a kickoff. And now he's probably not even the best guy to do that after the kid did it yesterday.
Right.
Mostert.
That's a great point, Jim. And just to jump back on Johnny Manziel and talk about him and his situation, Jim, how we hear from Mike Pettine and everybody in this building about evaluate. How difficult will it be to evaluate Johnny Manziel starting these, you know, multiple consecutive football games if, in fact, the next two look and feel, and very well could look and feel a lot like yesterday's game was?
Yeah.
Kansas City's going to be difficult. They're all playing for something, and they're all extremely potent offenses and very good and physical defenses as well.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, Matt, because he can do a lot of things right, but on the other end of these plays, he doesn't have the guy that finishes it off, and you get the result that you think you're going to get from him. So, I mean, you really have to – it is a tough evaluation. The thing about him is, he really cherishes that going out there and playing. And, I mean, he is not in awe of anybody, and he wasn't in awe of that crowd, that defense yesterday. He goes right at you, which is something that we have not seen an awful lot of from other quarterbacks that have come down the pike, and there have been many of them come here to the Browns. There's that ability to go in and really take somebody. He takes a defense on. He realizes that everyone's going after him, because of who he is.
Sure.
And yet he seems to really relish that, and he goes and gets it. Now, he just doesn't have enough guys to go get it with him. I mean, Barnidge has certainly given him a great year. I mean, another bunch of good plays yesterday. But other than that, I mean, it just isn't there for him. So it is a tough evaluation. But there is something in him that I would think that a coaching staff would look at and say, wow, I mean, he doesn't go out there and tiptoe around. I mean, he really goes out there and he goes at you.
No, and even the Seattle Seahawks players after the game were pretty effusive in their praise of Johnny Manziel, saying that he did a good job. He put pressure on us, kept us on our toes. They needed some time to kind of, adjust to him. And once they did, they felt that they did a better job. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that the Browns don't have any playmakers out wide for him. And I'll still say this, and I'll be saying it probably for only two more weeks, but I would much rather see Dwayne Bowe out there than Taylor Gabriel. And I know you want to play the young guys, but I just think Dwayne Bowe gives Johnny someone an opportunity to throw the ball to somebody with a big body. Terrell Pryor is clearly an experiment and a work in progress and doesn't offer a whole lot out there. And neither, you know, Marlon Moore, tremendous special teams player, had the one nice catch, but is not a guy that you want to rely on as a receiver. Really, Bowe should be playing, and it was nice to see him get catches. Yep. I was talking with Matt about this earlier. Did you find it odd, or did you notice that after the interception, all the Seattle Seahawks on defense like took a minute to go hug Bowe and give him respect?
Which I did notice that.
It kind of boggled my mind, and it made me just say, like, guys around the NFL respect Bowe's game on some level, number one. And number two, you almost got the feel, at least from the sideline, that they felt he's getting the shaft, and they just felt bad for him.
Well, I tell you what, once he got in the game, I mean, and it was, you're right, it was late. I mean, you could tell Manziel was fixated on him to the point that he even pushed that ball in on the interception. You're right about that. You know, the thing is that, you know, Gabriel has really not had a good year. He had a hard night in Cincinnati. He had a bad day yesterday. He hasn't been, even when he has been healthy before he suffered the concussion, he just hasn't been the guy that we had heard they anticipated him being after he had, you know, supposedly a very good offseason and a good camp leading in to the training camp part. So he just hasn't been the guy. I think, you know, Nathan, I think you're right, because I think, you know, Johnny really enjoyed doing that, getting that ball to Bowe. It was a target he could see. It was a guy that he could get the ball to that gave him a good look. And, you know, this thing, whatever it is, in this Dwayne Bowe just mystical season. I mean, for a team that really lacks this kind of playmaker and that kind of body, I mean, it is kind of stumping that he doesn't play. The other thing I really thought that Manziel really yesterday missed Hartline, because he had really started to get a good chemistry with him. And there were points that you could see where there were plays and situations in the game where you say, well, if Hartline had been there, you know, he probably would have been able to give Manziel a pretty good opportunity to make a play. And that wasn't there, of course, yesterday. But the Bowe thing is mystifying. It really is.
Jim, last question for me is how frustrating and upsetting was it to just see, especially on television in a game like this against an opponent like Seattle, to have Charles Gaines, I guess, undermine and disrespect Dante Whitner as they were barring, as many teammates do, and chatting back and forth, and then the push, and just seems like utter disrespect from a rookie to a guy that's been playing at a high level for a very long time.
Yeah, that is disappointing, and that's unfortunately, that's the fruits of a season like this, it seems. And you hate to see it come out like that, and in that kind of, you know, with that type of audience or that kind of, you know, exposure to it, it's not good. I know that Gaines is that kind of player that uses that kind of, I don't know, chip on his shoulder to get him where he is today, but it's not a good sight. I mean, I like Dante Whitner, and I respect Dante Whitner, and, you know, Dante Whitner's played in a lot of big games that hopefully someday Charles Gaines will play in that, but that's not a good look, Matt. Not a good look for anybody on that defense or anybody on that coaching staff to have that going on during a game like that. That obviously is out of control anyway because of the score. It you know, you wince when you see something like that.
You certainly do. Talk with Jim Donovan. Jim, where do the Browns go from here? What do you hope to see this team accomplish over the final two games?
Well, it's going to be really tough, Nathan. I mean, you laid it out there. These two teams need the games against the Browns, and I think that they realize that they can go get them and that they can score on the Browns. You know, I think that you look for individuals now for the Browns. I mean, you look, you know, again, you know, Manziel is worth tuning in to watch the game on Sunday afternoons, because you never know what you're going to see, and it does seem to be getting a little bit better. So far, I can't say there's a game where he has regressed at all, and I even think he took some steps yesterday over what he had done the week before, obviously in a win against San Francisco. So you just look for him to continue on this path, because that's the major thing, it seems, right now with what's left, you know, in the season and what's on the field, is that you want to see some kind of improvement. And he's the kind of guy that I think that you could take a look at that and say, well, I hope he gets better against really good opponents in the next 2 weeks. And if he continues to take these steps, now you sit back and you say, okay, you know, what are we going to do with him? And it seems as though it's leaning towards the favorable side, because they may really have a player here that can really lead this team.
We certainly hope that is the case. Jim, thanks so much for being with us, and certainly enjoy the rest of your day.
You too, guys. Take care.
Merry Christmas, Jim.
Yes, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. When we come back here on CBD, we still will hear from Joe Thomas, but let's hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine, right after this.
And that pass rush is relentless, you know, from the beginning of the game. You know, they get stronger as the game goes on. So, you know, that's a good defense. I think everybody in the league knows that. You know, we did some good things, but we didn't do enough of them.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Johnny Manziel after the game there. Some news from around the NFL. Bruce Arians saying the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, has torn his ACL. Again, big.
Same one?
Big loss. I don't know if it's the same one. Big loss. Was it last time? Was it an Achilles or an ACL?
I don't know.
It was a season-ending leg injury.
Exactly. That's what I thought. Sucks.
Man.
He's a good
bummer.
Player.
He is done for the season for a very good Arizona Cardinals
team.
Let's hear now from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine, after yesterday's loss to Seattle.
On the injury front, the most serious is John Greco with a knee. We'll have that MRI'd tomorrow. Tank Carter, elbow. Cam Irving rolled his ankle. Alex Mack has a calf. But those four, like I said, Greco's likely the most serious. Not good enough. You know, we say the margin for error against a team like the Seahawks is slim. And you know, at the end of the day, we weren't good enough. You know, defensively, it was. I thought we did a good job of getting them into longer third downs than what they're used to. Offensively, they'd been very efficient in having most of their third downs be of the medium variety, and we got them in a bunch of third and longs and couldn't get off the field. And that's you know, that sums up the day. I think they ended up 9 of 11 or something like that. But that's just, you know, you're not going to be very successful offensively. Did some good things, but just too inconsistent. You know, losing Greg hurt. And this late in the year, those backup guys not getting a ton of quality reps with the ones, but you know, that's part of it. They got to be able to step up and play. You know, I thought Johnny did some good things, but there were, you know, we were just too inconsistent. I thought we hurt ourselves with some drops. I do think we ran the ball fairly effectively. I know we were 90 plus yards against a pretty good rush defense. So, but as I said, the end of it, it's not good enough. Good to see the returner, Mostert, that we picked up. You know, give us a little spark in the return game. He was a guy that when we played Baltimore, we were very aware of where he was. Tried to kick away from him. Was obviously glad that we were able to pick him up midweek, and you know, he like I said, gave us some spark in the return game. But you know, time to regroup. You know, we'll take this week. We know we got to go on the road and play another good team who's hot. But that's the way it unfolds, and you know, we'll be ready. We'll play hard. I mean, that's one thing I'm proud of, the effort from start to finish. Our guys played hard.
It seemed like your defense was chasing
Yeah, I mean, it starts with the quarterback. I mean, that's, you know, there were ones he made with his feet, but when he was able to scramble, he's a hard guy to pressure, because then he has that ability to make the first guy miss and then make you really pay. It was the style of game that we wanted from a possession standpoint, but we needed more stops defensively. I mean, you know, the play right before the half really hurt us from a momentum standpoint. All we got, you know, we're in a call to just get the ball to come out early. We overloaded one side of the field. All we got to do is make a tackle, and we're off, and it's a one score game. And I think that was unfortunate that we ended up, you know, hand high on the face mask, and they got 3 points out of it, make it a two score game. So that was a tough way to end the first half.
Johnny,
yeah, just efficiency. I mean, they're one of the better red zone defenses in the league. But the, when you get down there, you got to be able to score points, and that was tough. That they were converting early and scoring touchdowns, and we were settling for field goals, and then even the one late to get it to 27-13. We agreed we needed to kick it there, but that was one where we at least thought about, hey, we don't know if we're going to get down there again. We should think about going for it. And I think we got sacked on third down and ended up having to kick it. So, no, it's just about efficiency down there, and that's the difference in games. You know, those third downs in the red zone are essentially 4-point plays.
Did you happen to see the shoving match between Charles Gaines and Dante Whitner? So what?
We saw it. I'm not sure. I mean, both those guys are very emotional, and I know that it diffused quickly, and they ended up. I saw him bumping fist, 10 seconds later. So I don't see that as a big deal.
Mike, what can you say about Wilson? The streak he's on with 19 touchdown passes and no interceptions.
Yeah, well, to me, if Tremont catches that ball, that might, because Wilson got knocked down on the play. I mean, that might change the game. We thought they were just going to run, and. That's why we were taking the timeouts. Knew that they were going to kick it to go up three scores. So, that's the difference in the game. We had drops on offense, drops on D. But overall, I mean, you could just see. I think the game is really slow for him when he sees it well. He does a good job of kind of smoking it down in the cadence. You know, they mix up enough quick count where you have to kind of show your hand early. But then he does a good job. Their offense has some flexibility to it. You see him moving the back and getting him in and out of plays. And I think that's where he's just had so much success. I think he has such a good feel for what they're doing. He prepares well, so he knows what you're in. He knows where to go with the football. I mean, he saw some mismatches. He went ahead and, into some contested coverage, threw some balls up. They made plays.
Why so much playing time for Bad Amosi?
Well, it hurt us with K-1 down. Really hurt us with K-1 down. That required a two-player move. So now we had to move Gaines inside. Gaines stayed out there in base, but then had to slide inside, which is something we never want to do. You like your nickel to be your nickel. But that was tough for us because K-1's been playing well, and he worked out before the game with the shoulder and felt that he couldn't go. I mean, and it was a situation where, I mean, he's tough. He wanted to be out there. But that was a tough one for us to force that move. He didn't practice much during the week. But I know he was real frustrated beforehand coming out of that workout. But that just forced a move with Batty. I know we got Pierre in some late. It's tough to have to shuffle guys like that and move them inside now. That was good to see. I mean, I thought we had a good plan. Went out and executed, hit some plays. We had a good feel for that. I mean, they played us. I mean, they're usually pretty consistent in their looks, and it's a matter of executing. And I thought we did a good job of it.
Johnny's overall, his pocket presence, a couple of times he actually looked like he read and he kind of flushed out a little bit and made some decisions. Can you just talk about his pocket presence and his reads?
Yeah, he's done a much better job of taking what is there. No, we had some. He got flushed probably a little bit more than we wanted him to, just because we had some breakdowns on the interior line, and that's probably the best among them. One of the top two or three, if not the best, pass rushing front four. So he did a good job of getting out and not forcing the ball. He had some good plays that were just throwaways. He got rid of it, but he did a good job. I like how he keeps his eyes down the field. He made some plays, getting out of the pocket.
Did anybody on the Seahawks prior to the game, any of your friends on the other side, say anything about the comment that went viral this week about Russell Wilson?
No.
In a joking manner?
No. Pete Carroll and I enjoyed a laugh about it at midfield. Yeah, none of the players. I mean, obviously, I know Rube, and I got a chance to talk to Rube and Fred Jackson after the game. But, no, Pete and I shared a private laughing moment about it. Before the game, yeah.
Barnage tied Ozzie Newsome's record for touchdown catches in a season by a tight end. Just
what can you say about what he's meant to you guys this season with that milestone?
Just as we've talked about Gary all along, it just comes down to it's a testament to who he is, how he prepares, and he'll be the first one to tell you it's all about getting an opportunity. And you see guys in the league, and I've talked about this before, that just kind of get typecast in a role. And people saw Gary Barnage as a number two tight end for a long time, and here he played behind Greg Olsen, played behind Jordan Cameron, and finally got an opportunity to be the guy. And it comes as a surprise to a lot of people, but not to those internally that know Gary. And I think we saw glimpses of it last year at times when Jordan was hurt, or even when he was the second tight end of him, of him making plays.
Good. And that was head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine. Not good enough is what he said. That would be one way to describe a 30-13 loss for the Cleveland Browns, the Seattle Seahawks, a game that never felt bad, but never felt close either.
Right. Not good enough, not close enough. Not even close.
No. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from Joe Thomas. Some interesting comments. Is everybody so fixated on the strength of Cam Irving? Joe Thomas is about to declare himself the weakest offensive lineman in the NFL. It says he does it with technique.
Right.
Leverage. Student of the science of the position. We'll hear from Joe Thomas right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Questfield was a house of pain for the Cleveland Browns on Sunday. So a little bit of praise there for Johnny Manziel. Let's hear now from Joe Thomas, the Browns Pro Bowl offensive lineman, who spoke with the media today.
What did you see from Johnny, especially against a defense as good as Seattle's?
Mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of poise and composure. I think he did a really good job of the operations side of things from an offensive standpoint. I don't think we had any pre-snap penalties. He did a good job of getting us in and out of the huddle. He gave us a chance to win on offense, and that's what you need to ask out of your quarterback in a tough road environment.
John, obviously another significant injury at on the offensive line with Greco going down. Just what does he mean to the group, and how big a blow is that?
Well, he's obviously been an important piece for us, and he's in there as the starter for a reason because he's a darn good right guard, and losing him is tough. I thought Cam Irving did a nice job stepping in, moving over to right guard, and trying to pick up where John left off in a tough environment. But obviously, whenever you lose your starter and you lose a guy as good as John, it's going to hurt you.
Joe, where's your confidence level at with Cam? Obviously, he's been overpowered at times, and was yanked out of the lineup, and Pastor was given the job. So obviously, it's been kind of a rough rookie season for him. Where are you at with him, and how do you view him considering all that?
Well, I think he's making improvement. I think that's the number one thing we're asking of him right now is just keep getting better, and I think we're seeing that improvement. And, all guys kind of mature at different times, and it takes a little bit of time getting used to the NFL. It's a different game. Schematically, the players are different. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster, and I see a guy that's willing and eager to learn and a guy that's getting better.
Joe, what do you get out of a game like the one against Seattle that can help the team in any way? I mean, it was obviously a tough game in the end. You get anything out of these?
Well, I think for a guy like Johnny, who's an inexperienced young quarterback, it's great to get any game reps, especially in an environment like Seattle's, which is loud and hostile. They've got the number two rated defense in the NFL that doesn't give up a lot of points or a lot of yards. So I think for a guy like Johnny and some of the other younger players, it's a really good learning and growing experience.
When there are drops, as there were yesterday, to slow things down, is that kind of up to Johnny to buck up the huddle and say, hey, don't worry about it? Or what happens when the conspicuous drops and stop drives
occur, and you need to overcome that adversity?
Well, that's a good question. I guess I don't get involved in the drop discussions, so maybe direct those at Johnny.
Hey, Joe, the TV cameras showed you and Johnny having a relatively lengthy conversation on the sideline, maybe after a mix-up in protection. Do you remember that, and would it be a good sign that he's able to have those kind of talks with you right after something breaks down?
Yeah, you know what? I don't remember exactly what happened or when I was even talking to Johnny, so I guess I can't specifically talk about that play, but Johnny's shown a very, very good understanding of our protections. He's a really smart guy, and he's really put in the time this year, and having Josh McCown there to help kind of tutor him on protections has been very helpful. So it's great having the confidence and trust in him, knowing that we can go to him and kind of tell him what we were looking at or what we thought should happen, or, you know, if he does make a mistake, try to coach him up and help him understand, you know, where the mistake was and how we should go forward if we get those type of looks again.
Hey, Joe, strictly in terms of football, has your opinion of Johnny changed over the last few weeks when he's shown some progress on the field?
I wouldn't say it's changed in the last few weeks. I think it changed kind of at the beginning of the season here when he showed that dedication and commitment that he didn't have last year. So I think what we're seeing out on the field is just sort of the fruits of the hard work that he's been putting in and the dedication that we've seen with him in the film room and in meetings. And I think it's just natural when you spend that extra effort, you're going to see those results on the field, and that's what we're seeing from Johnny.
Hey, Joe, you've been through enough of them. What would another coaching change set this team back?
Well, I guess I don't want to really think about it or talk about it much, but I will say that anytime you make a change in an organization on the coaching staff or you make a change in the organization, There is a one step back that you have to take, and that's just a part of making the change. And you're going to get a lot of new players. You're going to get, obviously, new coaches, new people in the building. And it does take time to teach people the new philosophy, the new procedures, the new schemes. And certainly this NFL game is something that it takes more than 1 or 2 years to be really good in a scheme. There's a level of proficiency that you can get in a year to be okay, but it really takes a few years in a scheme before you can get really good at something.
Relative to that discussion, you know, and understood that you lost your O-line coach at the top of the season, but as you approach the end of your second year in this scheme, have you noticed meshing more with what DeFilippo's thinking and what your line coaches are trying to do as they replace Mola?
Well, I think if you look at the last 3-4 maybe games, you've seen a good steady progress in the run game and the protection schemes. Like I mentioned last week, we're starting to kind of figure out what we do well and how personnel-wise we fit in with Coach Flip's schemes, and I think you're seeing that good, steady progress. I mean, we easily could have had over 100 yards rushing yesterday had we had the game been a little bit closer in the fourth quarter to just get one more carry. So I think you're seeing very good run game improvements because we're starting to figure out what plays we do well in Flip's scheme, what our running backs like to do, what the O-line could do well. You're starting to see improvement, I think, in protection schematically, where we need to go, how Johnny understands the fits. So it's a long process. It's something that takes time, but I'm optimistic about the improvement that we've been making, and I'm hoping that these last two games here we're able to show even more improvement.
Hey, Joe, has Jimmy Haslam ever talked to you about what you think should be done with the coaching staff or front office?
No.
Would you want him to?
I'm happy to talk to anybody in the building if they have any interest in hearing my input, but I'm happy to be to give a lot of input or to just be the left tackle. It's, you know, not in my job description to discuss changes or anything like that, but if somebody asks me my opinion on things, I'll be happy to give it to them.
Now, you've been around, Joe, a long time in terms of the locker room rhetoric and politically correct the things to say and not to say. How did that Mike Pettine commenting on the Russell Wilson thing wash out yesterday insofar as you observed anything?
Well, I don't know if it really has any effect on the game per se. It's hard to say that Russell Wilson was more motivated to play well because of comments that the other coach made, because I think that's something that gets overblown amongst fans and in the media, because you got to focus on something during the week, and you know, when somebody says something that can be perceived as a slight, it's easy to say, oh, they're going to be more motivated. But I think the majority of guys in the NFL are so self-motivated to be perfect, it really doesn't matter what anybody else says about them. And I know Russell a little bit, being a Wisconsin guy, and he's about as motivated as a quarterback as it comes, as it is. And so I don't really think any comments that were made during the week had any outcome on how he played, or any input on how he played.
But in terms of that motivation thing, we're talking about Manziel. You know, he has a tangible reason to be motivated, and that is to dig out of the hole that he dug himself when he was benched for two games. And do you sense that Johnny has a greater sense of urgency these last couple of games because of his need to get it done fast?
I haven't noticed it in the last few games. What I have noticed is his sense of urgency this entire season. I think he understood that his rookie year was so abysmal, and the level of commitment he showed in his rookie year was insufficient for an NFL quarterback. And you don't get many opportunities in the NFL. They'll give you a couple second chances if you're really talented like he is, but after a certain point, people just will give up on you, and then your career is over. So I think he understood how important it was to show his commitment and his desire to make the sacrifice to be an NFL quarterback. I think the reason he's playing well right now is because of that sacrifice and that commitment that he's made the whole year.
No point taken on, you don't get that many extra chances. Do you get a little bit of a kick or notice with some interest when a Brandon Whedon shows up in a game like yesterday's?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't really get to watch much football yesterday because we were on the airplane until about 1 o'clock. But I think it's well known in the NFL, guys that have perspective understand that this league is not for long, and there's plenty of talented people that don't make it if they don't have that commitment and they're not willing to make that sacrifice. So if you have talent, people are going to give you more opportunities. That's the way it is. But at some point, even guys with talent, people will give up on them because there is a level of desire and commitment that you need to be successful at any position in this league, and no more important than the position of quarterback.
Welcome back. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Joe Thomas there, praising the work ethic of Johnny Manziel. That was notable, and of course, notable from Mike Pettine. John Greco done for the year with that injury, an MCL injury. He is done, so Cam Irving will start the final two games at right guard. And I thought Joe Thomas had some good comments for Cam. When we come back, last chance to get in here, 216-578-0850. If you're holding, we'll get to you, and we'll give our final thoughts here on this Monday before Matt Wilhelm bids us adieu. On Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty
Merry
Ford.
Christmas.
We're going out and we're going to try to win these last two games. And we're going to put all our efforts into it every week, as we've done all season. That's all that we can ask of ourselves, to give everything that we have.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, on ESPN 850 WKNR.
That was Cam Irving, the Browns guard. Came in for the injured John Greco, struggled a little bit early, settled down, and then struggled a little bit more late in a rough game against the Seattle Seahawks, trying to get better, trying to be focused. Let's get Len in Wadsworth in here. Len's been holding for a while. Len, thanks for joining us.
Hi, guys. Love your show.
Thank you.
I just got to tell you, I drive a lot, and I am so sick of hearing about Johnny Manziel. I could puke. I just want to say, and if Johnny Manziel had a head coach like Mike Tomlin, Mike McCarthy, Bill Belichick, Tom Coughlin, this guy'd be unemployed. We spend so much time talking about somebody and hoping that he will be good. I mean, where else other than Cleveland could we have a 5'11" alcoholic quarterback and talk about him forever?
I mean, hey, he's 5'11" and three quarters.
Oh, okay. Oh,
Russell Wilson drinks
Matt.
Brain water.
Hey, Matt, I got to tell you, you played in a quality program. I'm a Buckeye. I graduated from there. My whole family did. And I got to tell you, the stuff he got away with at A&M, he would have never got away with in Columbus.
No way.
There's You're no right. way.
Well, Urban Meyer Columbus, maybe.
This is true. Not Jim Tressel Columbus.
Not Jim Tressel Columbus.
No way.
You know what? Another thing that I came away with from that game in Seattle, Russell Wilson and Johnny are very similar in stature. I mean, very similar. I was shocked at how little Russell Wilson is. Now, Russell Wilson, I think, has a little bit of a thicker base
yep.
than Johnny, but very similar in terms of size. And it's interesting. I haven't noticed like I did in the first year, and you tell me if it's the same for you. Russell Wilson doesn't look that small to me when he's playing, and Johnny doesn't look as small as he once did. That first game against Cincinnati, he literally looked like a child.
Well, I still believe that when...
He just looks much more in command.
He does. When Johnny Manziel is in space, he looks in better command. He doesn't look as small. When he's in space, that's because there's no one standing next to him that's over 6 foot. But when he has to stand in the pocket and the pocket collapses on Johnny Manziel looks like my son standing next to me.
Your son's a big boy.
Yeah,
to be fair.
Okay. He's almost Johnny Manziel's height.
Yes.
And he's 7.
And he's 7. Indeed. Yes, he is. All right. Obviously, it was disappointing in Seattle, but that's a very, very good football team. Not going to get any easier for the Browns against the streaking Kansas City Chiefs and then against the best offense. I said it, the best offense in the NFL, the Pittsburgh Steelers in Week 17. They're going to have a lot of soul searching on the defensive side of the football. You got Charcandrick West, Travis Kelce, Jeremy Maclin coming to town. Or actually, we're going to their town next week. I think that this Browns team needs to find something over the final 2 weeks that they can get excited about. I think it's going to be tough on the offense with the lack of playmakers. I think it's going to be tough on the defense given the opponents and the environments that they're going to be playing in. But hopefully, things can get a little bit better. 30 or more points in 6 of the last 7. 24 or more in 11 of the last 12 for this Browns defense. Hopefully, they can end the season on a positive note. And if they do, it will be something against those two teams. Matt, have a great time on your trip.
Will do.
You will be missed. Happy holidays.
Thank you very much.
Christmas,
same to you guys.
You and your family.
Merry Christmas, Dino.
Dino, are you coming?
You too.
Are you with me tomorrow?
I'll be in the dog bowl with you tomorrow.
Oh,
sweet.
Won't that be exciting? Yeah, he'll be right here. Mo Pedman is fired up. Mo Pedman just cleared his calendar. He's going to be here too.
Mo Pedman just kickstarted his motor.
He did. His moped. Vespa. All right, that'll do it for us. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Jim Donovan for being with us. Thanks to Dino. Thanks to Matt Wilhelm. I am Nathan Segura. And you have been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Driven by Liberty Ford. Merry Christmas, everybody.
See you in the end.
The preceding program was a production of the Cleveland Browns and a part of the Browns Media Network.